So we are starting on money. Money in marriage specifically. So you can take these principles and apply them in lots of different ways. But many times, money can be a source of conflict, can be a big blessing, but it can also create a lot of conflict in marriage. So we're not talking about Frank and Wanda anymore. We're now on to John and... who is John's wife in here? We have Linda?
John and Linda.
John and Linda. Now, John... You know, you kind of feel for John here. He was at Walmart, being a dutiful husband, picking up the milk. And on his way, he strolled by the electronics section, 70-inch brand-name TV, only $299.99. A bunch of nines. But it was too good to be true. It's such a huge sale. And, right, if he gets the Walmart credit card, he gets $50 off. So the credit card was accepted, and taking that as a sign from God of confirmation, he rolled that TV to the car. Unfortunately, when he got home, his wife Linda did not share his excitement. She exploded at John and demanded that he take it back. In the past, John has given in, but this time he fought back. This is my money, and I will spend it my way. Wow. So John and Linda.
This never happens.
This is a totally fictional... purely fictitious scenario. Okay, so think about, all right, we're talking, really trying to get to the heart, right? What's the heart level? So what are the desires in John and Linda that could be fueling the conflict? Could be lots of them. What are they wanting? What are they wanting?
I think John gave in to a fleshly desire because he wanted that television.
But it was 70 inches.
Yes.
I mean, that's a big TV.
I guarantee if he lived where I live, it would not fit.
Okay. So it could have some...
It would take up one foot wall.
Could be some fleshly...
Yes.
Okay. Desires on John's part.
I think on her side, she was forgetting that, yes, he probably didn't really need this TV.
Yeah.
She was forgetting he still is the head of the household.
Okay.
Regardless.
Okay. What else?
John has a desire for the perfect man cave.
That's right.
You know, with the way TVs are these days, if you don't get a 70-inch screen, you can't really see the action like everybody else.
That's right. It just doesn't live up to the...
It's an inferior product, and what's even the point if you don't have it?
And it's all about hospitality, because John's going to
do
a lot of ministry welcoming people to watch the game.
Yeah, 40 inches won't cut it anymore.
It's not.
And you guys sound like you have a screen.
With someone like this, you're losing money. That's such a good deal. You're losing money.
Yeah, I mean, normally it would be $5,000, but...
Oh.
Just losing money. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can always give your oldest to me personally.
Generosity.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're kind of joking around. What are some maybe deeper level things that could be going on with John and with Linda that could be fueling, like, why are they so upset if it's just a TV?
Pride.
Okay. Pride on both? Or?
John's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there could definitely be some pride and materialism, right?
Maybe this isn't the first time this has happened.
Why do you say that?
Based on the fact that he's saying it's my money and I can spend it the way I want, so he's probably done this before.
Yeah. It says in the past,
he's given in.
Okay. So maybe he's bought things and she said, no, take it back. Okay, takes it back. So there could be some underlying sense of resentment going on John's part, feeling like he doesn't have control over what's going on. There could be, as Judy had said, some issues about who's kind of making the money decisions. You know.
I think there's a lack of communication also in that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know we always had an agreement that neither one of us spent over like $50 without consulting the other one.
Uh-huh. Okay, maybe 500 today.
That was before the days of cell phones.
Yeah.
So sometimes it took
a while.
A little while.
Yeah.
And then you looked at it like if the deal was gone, you weren't supposed to have
okay.
that X, whatever it was.
Yeah. So you mentioned next, like the next question is, how could it have been avoided, right? So you could have kind of an agreement or communication on what you will and won't spend money on. Any other things they could have done to maybe avoid some of this conflict?
You could have called her.
Yeah.
Like,
hey.
Hey, I see this really good deal.
Okay, it goes to the voicemail. What does that mean?
It's
a sign. Oh, look at this deal. Look at this deal. Comment if you don't want this.
Yeah, I think another part is she exploded at him. You know, that's not necessarily the way to de-escalate
right.
conflict or talk somebody
Proverbs. Don't
into something. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big TV, though.
That is a big TV. That is a big TV.
See, at that point, it's by a projector.
Yeah. Now, what I thought what was interesting is that kind of I think we maybe unknowingly assume maybe their income level, right? We kind of just put ourselves in that situation. So you don't know whether John and Linda are living on $50,000 a year or $500,000 a year, right? And maybe that has an impact on
mm-hmm.
what percent of their income this TV is. And is this a control issue? Is this, what is the issue really about? There's a lot of stuff that's missing in here. So why do you think, right? Why do finances and money and how we spend it, really save it, why can that cause so much friction?
I feel like it's very much like I earned it, and so I can spend it.
Ah.
And when you put two people together and mm-hmm. not knowing the situation, but if, what's John's wife? Linda. If Linda is a stay-at-home mom, like, she's not making any money, so then it's, like, John's money.
Ah.
And so.
Yeah, so who earned the money can make it be a source of conflict, or can be,
mm-hmm.
depending on how they look at the marriage. And
I think Linda could look at it like he's more or less stating that she's not worth anything because she's a stay-at-home mom, but he forgets that she takes care of the children, probably keeps his house clean, fixes all these meals,
yeah.
all this stuff, and so she feels like he's saying she's not worth anything,
mm-hmm.
but he's overlooking all these things that she does.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read articles saying how much a stay-at-home mom is worth
mm-hmm.
if they had to hire a maid, a cook,
oh, yeah.
a babysitter. It's a
yeah.
sizable amount of money.
Yeah, there's a lot of different scenarios.
But you can't always
that
boil things down to money.
Yeah.
Because like the saying goes, you can't take it with you.
Yeah. Now in this situation, we don't really know, we kind of assume when John says, this is my money. But we only know who's earning the money, how much, whether they both work, whether he's working. We don't know why John it said that. Maybe she's the one that's a doctor. And John works at the hardware store, and he's spending his money that he earned that month.
I think there might be a fear of not having enough in the future.
Yeah.
Maybe this is his pattern,
mm-hmm.
is to make these big purchases, and when they really shouldn't have, and they can't afford to do it. So it's just probably, could be a fear.
Yeah.
That they won't have what they need.
Yeah, and I think you said, like what she's saying, there could be a fear, and if he's done it in the past, right, there could be, this could be the last straw type of sense where
mm-hmm.
they've had this conversation before. He bought a stereo, and he bought a this, and he bought a that, and he bought a this. So there's definitely a sense of one decision really happens in the midst of the context. And so kind of we're all kind of getting at that idea of why it's so important to be on the same page, right? Why is it so important to be on the same page? So when we talk about money, we'll talk about a lot of principles in this study, but when we talk about the context of marriage, one of the key things is that the goal in marriage is to have oneness, that you're to come together as one. And so when you think about money in marriage, if we're not one, if we're not on the same page, we're gonna have all kinds of difficulties. What are we saving for? What are we working for? How much do we work? Where do we work? What do we spend our money on? There's all kinds of areas and ways. And usually, money is a good way to reveal and display areas where you're not at one with your spouse. Because you're spending it, and it creates this conflict, and it reveals, hey, you thought this was important. I don't think that's important, in essence. Okay? So a couple of stats there. It's estimated that money is responsible for 22% of all divorces. That was 2015. Still kind of holds today. I just today did a search. 20 to 40%, they say, listed as related to money and financial issues. 20 to 40% of all divorces. And there's 2,350 is an estimate of verses in the Bible. So there's a lot to say in the Bible about money. I did a little search trying to look up, okay, what's a denarius? What's a drachma? What's a talent? You know, like to get an idea of the sense of the size of money. So when we talk about those, we might kind of get an idea of what Jesus is talking about. And so one thing we're going to do is we're going to talk about kind of some principles, but I think the foundational one is the idea of stewardship, right? So what does it mean to be a steward? I should clarify that. What is a steward? You take care of something that's been given to you, okay? And I think I would add a little bit to that.
When you're a steward of someone's money, your own, if you're a steward of someone else's money, I think you would treat it the same as you would your own. It would be, try to be frugal.
Yeah.
Not stingy.
Yeah.
Frugal.
So when you think about managing something that's been given to you, I just want to make sure we clarify that it's been given to us to manage, but not to own in a sense. So a steward is someone who never actually owns those possessions in the sense that they have total freedom. Like if my father gives me a gift and says, this is for you, it's yours. I'm now free to do whatever I want with that because I have ownership in a sense. And so a steward is someone who is accountable to the owner and they're managing it, but it never ceases to belong to the owner. It's always belonging to the owner. So when we talk about stewardship, we want to talk about how we want to see God as the owner of everything, right? And we're all stewards of that. Okay, so let's look at a couple of verses there. I'm going to turn to page 2. Some volunteers, got some readers this morning. Exodus, Andy, good eye contact. Noah, Deuteronomy, Job. Yes? Okay, go.
Exodus 19:5. Now then, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be my own possession among all the peoples, for all the earth is mine.
Okay, and Deuteronomy?
Behold, to the Lord your God belong heaven and the highest heavens, the earth and all that is in it.
Mm-hmm. And then Job.
Who has given to me that I should I should repay him? Whatever is under the whole heaven is mine.
Right. Okay, so just if you're circling or underlining, what are the things that God lists in these verses that belong to him?
All the earth.
All the earth. In Exodus, right at the end. All the earth is mine. Pretty extensive. What about Deuteronomy?
The earth and everything that's in it.
The earth and all that's in it.
Mm-hmm.
One other thing in that one. Yeah, heaven. So even above the earth, right? Heaven and the highest heavens. And Job?
The whole heaven.
The whole heaven and whatever is under the whole heaven. Right? So you've got basically everything. And there's one more that he says back in Exodus. What do you see?
Israel.
Yeah. So there's a key thing that not just all these material, the cattle, the earth, the heavens, but his desire, right? If you will indeed obey my voice and keep heaven, you shall be my own possession. So his desire is that the people would belong to him as well. And so this idea is that we are the stewards, right? And so everything that we have, right, has been given to us to manage. And if you've read through Ecclesiastes, you get the idea that no matter what you build, you only have it for a time, right? And then it's passed on to someone else, okay? So there's a good note there, right? It helps us understand why if you steal something, right, what you're doing is you are trying to take something that God has given to someone else to steward and go against his plan for who is to steward and who is to manage which portion. So why do you think, like, why is that such a foundational thought? I mean, think about money in your marriage. Like, why is that so important? What could go wrong if we don't have that view?
Spend money on whatever you want if you don't realize everything belongs to God.
Yeah.
And you need to spend it in a manner that's respectful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't want to go waste your money and go, no, look what I bought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need to steward well and show that you're looking out.
Yeah. You know, like you said, you would spend it on whatever you want, whatever your desires are for.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What about, like, in the context of a marriage? So, I mean, that's true for all of us as individuals. Why is it important to remember in a marriage?
I think sometimes, especially if I have two incomes,
mm-hmm.
there could be, is my money and is her money.
Mm-hmm.
And, or if one is not, you know, wants a stay-at-home mom, is my money and she gets to live off of my money.
Mm-hmm.
Or even think about it in terms of our money instead of this is the Lord's money.
Right, right. And just to confess, one of my habits, I love to listen to Dave Ramsey. So there's some good and some bad there. And but one of the constant conflicts when married people call in is them complaining about how he or she spends his or her money, or sometimes it's our money. And so really, my money, your money, our money, it's all God's money in a sense. And so forgetting that makes it more about if it's my desires or your desires
mm-hmm.
that are going to be winning out. We talked about that with conflict and
mm-hmm.
oneness before as well. It's not the husband's desires or the wife's desires that should be ultimate in our marriage. It should be the Lord's desires. So we're going to talk about wisdom, applying God's wisdom. I want to kind of think about this. When we talk about wisdom, this is kind of the grid that I'm going to refer to. Is that, okay. So this box is a great box. So this is, right, all your choices that you can make, all your possibilities are in this box. And inside this circle is obedience. Okay, I'll give you one guess. What's outside this circle?
Disobedience.
Disobedience, or the shorter word, sin.
Sin.
Okay, sin, yeah. Oh, see, we got it now. So when we talk about wisdom and foolishness, do you think it's a sin to be foolish, to do something foolish?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes? Okay. And why?
Because you know better.
Okay. Let's say that you have a Christian man, Christian woman. They're in college, don't have a job, and they decide to get married. And they don't have really a lot of income. They're not really sure where they're going to live. Is that going to be sin?
Foolishness can lead to sin.
What's that?
It can lead to sin.
Okay. I think we're getting somewhere, right? I think we're getting somewhere. So the border of what's sin, so when you talk about wisdom, imagine this circle was more like a top of a huge tower, right? Where are you the safest? If you go to the edge and you fall off, you die, right? You've committed sin, okay? The more foolish you are, okay, the closer you get to the edge of committing sin, okay? It puts you in danger of committing sin. It puts you closer to greater temptation, okay? So think about, let's go to James real quick. And then we're going to go to some of these proverbs. Okay. So if we look at James 1, okay, down in like verses 12 to 15, he's talking about these trials, these temptations, how God is not tempting him. And in verse 14, but each person is tempted when he's lured and enticed by his own desire. Then desire, when it conceives and gives birth to sin, sin when it's fully grown brings forth death. So his desire is leading him away, which eventually conceives in sin. Okay? So some of the things we're going to be talking about, John might have some desires that are leading him towards foolish actions. Linda might have the same thing as well. And so when we talk about wisdom, there's going to be times in which you might be trying to figure out that you know that you're not sinning to make this choice, but you're trying to decide, is it a wise choice? Because foolish choices put us either in sin itself or very close to or tempted, right? Or it leads us in a desire to where we might be close to sin. So foolishness on its own is not necessarily, by definition, sin. Sometimes people act foolishly. They're ignorant. They're unaware, right? And so we want the foolish to come and learn and gain wisdom. Any questions about what we're seeing there? Okay, so when we go to the Proverbs, right, we might be talking about scenarios where, how much should I work? Should I work 80 hours a week, 60 hours, 40 hours, 20 hours, 10, right? There's going to give us some wisdom on, should I work a lot? Should I work hard? But those may not necessarily be sinful choices to choose to work 30 hours versus 50 hours. So that's kind of a tough distinction, because sometimes we think that obedience, there's one right choice, like there's a little dot, and everything else is sin if I don't make that one right choice. And so there is some freedom within your marriage to realize that your husband and wife might be wanting to make these two different choices, and there's different wisdom behind each of those choices, and neither one of those is sinful. And that can kind of relieve some of that tension if you're trying to decide what's the wisest thing versus what's sinful. Okay? Any questions along that line? Okay, so we're going to start and we're going to hit some points of wisdom. So if you have your handout, we'll have a lot of these verses in there. But and the paragraph there kind of sums up what we're saying. Many of these observations are not ethically binding, right? They're gifts about what will be helpful, what's wise versus what's foolish. Okay, don't be too rich or too poor. Who can read Proverbs 30 for us? Aiden, go for it.
Give me neither poverty nor riches. Leave me with the food that is needful for me, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God.
Okay. All right. Let it sink in there. So, if you were to define poverty from the viewpoint of the author here, what seems to be the, what would be poverty in his eyes?
Not having food.
Not having food. No food, right? And so on the opposite, if I have food, am I in poverty?
No.
Not necessarily. Okay. And so what does the proverb, what does it list as the danger? If I don't have any food to eat, what's the danger of living in poverty?
Stealing,
right? Sin. It leads to sin. And then the implications we could draw about contentment. So how would this help us if we have this kind of give me neither poverty nor riches? How can that be helpful? When you think about managing and stewarding God's money for you, why would it be helpful to have this kind of perspective?
Being thankful for what you have.
Okay, so there's a lot of contentment, right? It's a big thing. God wants us to be content. Okay. Have enough food, and that's enough, right? And I can do whatever God wants with the rest of the money that God's given me. What else?
I think gratitude, thankfulness, mm-hmm. that, okay, I'm not tempted to steal in order to eat today. And also, I don't have so much that I'm forgetting and profaning the name of, what is it? Yeah, denying him and saying who's the Lord.
Yeah, and a lot of times I think we talked about how contentment is almost like a foundation that leads to, right, hopefully even more gratitude and gratefulness. Yeah, and I think that, you know, with contentment, give me neither riches. So the rich person may be so content where he says, right, what's the danger of riches that they say? Yeah, it could deny the Lord. Who is the Lord? Can you guys think of other scenarios or people in Scripture that were just so content with what they had, they just denied the Lord? Who is the Lord?
Nebuchadnezzar.
That's the first one that comes to my mind. Mm-hmm. Look at all. Who is the Lord, right? Look at all that I've made.
Well, even Solomon in his disobedience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Pharaoh,
right? Just there, have everything they think that they need, all the power, all the money. And so this is kind of it's easy for people to, you know, pray that they not be in poverty, but it's kind of unique to say, don't give me riches. Don't give me wealth. Mm. And does he necessarily say here that wealth or poverty, are they sinful? No. So what he's recognizing is that they each have their own temptations. Right, the greater the poverty or the greater the riches, the greater those temptations towards one of those two things. And so there's a range in which he's, and also look at how he says, feed me with the food that is needful for me, right? And I think there is a sense in which God uniquely tailors how much you're able to steward. And so there may be times where, because of the way God created you, you have the ability to steward a lot of money and not be drawn into the sin. And there may be others where you don't have that ability. It's too much of a temptation for you. And so it may be God's grace to bless you with neither riches nor poverty. Okay? So we're not seeking poverty or riches, right? So we want to be content. We don't want poverty. That's good to stay away from. Nor riches. So, and this is something where I was thinking when I said, like, sometimes I have some, when Chris and I listen to Dave Ramsey, one of their phrases, if you ever listen to him, is live like no one else so that what? Later you can give or live like no one else. And so it's almost like they want you to live in complete poverty so later you can live in complete wealth. And that's not, I don't think, what they're saying, but the idea is like total deprivation, then you've got total surplus later on. Whereas not necessarily either one of those needs to happen if you've got all that you need.
I think an idea behind this verse 2 is that the author wants to depend on God. Mm-hmm. When he's too rich, he just denies God because he doesn't need to depend on him. But when he's so poor that he has to steal, he's also not depending on God to provide for him.
Yeah. I do know that, I don't know if any of you had any kind of major financial losses, but that definitely, it's a great way for God to draw you close. In our life, when we've had, you know, several figure losses in one region or another, it's like, wow. It's just a reminder that it's not what's in the bank that's my peace and security. Judy?
It may take a while, but you have to realize that you come to the realization that no matter what, God is still in control.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if you've been scammed or whatever, those people are under God's rule just the same as we are.
Yeah.
And he sees. There will be a day of reckoning.
Yeah.
When the Lord comes, we're all going to be held accountable.
Yeah, you bring up a good point in that sometimes we can infer, and this happened, you know, all throughout the times of the Bible, we can infer meaning behind riches and poverty as well when we look at other people. So we can, in the biblical time that wealth was a sign of virtue and righteousness in a sense that God has blessed this man, and poverty is a sign of that we've been cursed, we're sin, we're foolish. Whereas often that's not the case. Okay. Okay, second one, avoid what? What are we going to avoid?
Get rich quick.
Get rich quick. Doesn't say avoiding to get riches, and we don't want to have too many riches. So, wealth gained hastily will dwindle, but whoever gathers little by little will increase it. A faithful man will abound with blessings, but whoever hastens to be rich will not go unpunished. So what do you think is the desire, right? Here we're not really focusing on desire to gain. Notice that it's almost commended in the second half. Whoever gains little by little will increase it. So the focus is on the quickness and hastily. So what's the problem with that, right? Or why? Let's start with why. Why do we want to get rich quickly?
Greed. Idolatry.
Idolatry and greed. Okay, keep going. So we got idolatry. We got greed. Anything else? Why would we want to get rich quick?
It doesn't take near as much work.
Yeah. Laziness.
And impatience.
And impatience, yes.
Yeah.
So both different reasons for not wanting to gather little by little, right?
That gives you power.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kind of a lust for power, and if we get it quickly. Okay, so let's be creative here. Think into your examples of what you've seen, or how do people usually go about doing so, getting rich quick? What are some top ways? What's that?
Gambling.
Gambling, okay. We got gambling. What else?
Inheritance.
Inheritance, okay. Just wait for your rich uncle. What else? Is it true? Yeah, Chris?
Theft.
Mm-hmm.
You can always marry it.
Marriage?
Well, that's happening.
It's very, yeah. Yeah, so you said like unethical business, so we could say like scams.
Yeah. Or just running your business without integrity.
Right, so like lying on your taxes and all this.
Or you have like white collar gambling, which is like playing the market.
Yeah, so I would say a huge one is just debt and leveraging. Mm. So that's if you have something that you think is going to be a big payoff and you have $10,000 to invest, but you can borrow $100,000. To make that same investment, well, you're going to gain so much more if things go well, right?
Yeah.
So we've seen 2008, we see all kinds of examples,
yep.
Right, where it's going great. Let's just keep it going. Let's borrow and borrow and borrow, right? And when things go well, yes, debt is a powerful way to leverage that advantage.
Yep.
But when things don't go well, right, there's that huge risk that we take on.
And even when that goes well, there's a lot of issues that come with it.
Like, that's good. What are the issues that come with it?
Then the pride that comes with that.
Uh-huh.
A lot of it.
Yeah. And I think one commonality, like you say, the pride is that when I think about, we were talking about this, something to do with this the other day, is that in both cases, if you do leverage or you gamble and it pays off, very rarely do you say, I did it, and then you step away from it. No, you just go more and more. And one common observation in the casinos is that you can see video after video of someone that's winning big, and they just stay there until it's all gone, mm-hmm. Right? Very, very rare do they leverage, they win, and then they walk away, because there's something deeper that's they're drawn to, more than just a specific dollar amount.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, on the debt leveraging, small businessman, you have to look at debt and leveraging.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not the debt and leveraging, it's the misuse of it.
Yeah, and when we say some of these things, like it's not wrong to receive an inheritance. It's not wrong to receive some wealth from someone you marry. So not all of these are necessarily wrong, but they are ways in which sometimes we can seek to get rich quick. And again, the use of it, debt's going to be something we'll talk about specifically later on in the study.
Lottery
is another big one. Yes, yeah, gambling/lottery. That's my retirement plan, is just buy my lottery ticket. In 1,000 years, I will. So there's many kind of ways to go after it. And so why is it dangerous to us, to our souls, to seek to do it that way, quickly? What's the danger of seeking to do it quickly versus slowly, little by little?
That's not God's way.
Okay. So that's pretty simple, right? Yep, we're getting to part C. He's leading me right into it, working hard. Yes? Yeah. Yeah, and I would say with the Proverbs one, when it talks about wealth gained hastily will dwindle, if you can imagine your child receiving as a gift $100 versus raking leaves to earn $100, you can imagine which one would get spent more quickly. Right? What's that? That is a lot of leaves. We did some tough negotiating in our house one time about how much they get per bag of leaves or whatever. So my kids are much better negotiators as they've gotten older. Like, that was not enough money.
It was about the wisdom that you imparted.
It was about the wisdom. I said, you've learned, my son. Now they crush me in Monopoly now. They're like, that's a horrible price. We're going to have to up the price. So yeah, there's this danger.
Well, a lot of times when you're trying to get rich quick, you have a specific desire to use it for when you gain it. And so usually it's like, I want this house or this thing, so if I get rich, then I get it. So it's like the money's already spent before you get it. Kind of thing.
Almost like there's a lack of contentment that's saying, I've got to get it quickly because I can't live and my life's not good enough until I get to that point.
Yeah.
It's a good point.
I think almost none of these methods are actually producing anything for anyone else.
Mm.
They're mostly like hating my neighbor by cheating them, by getting the upper hand, by marrying, you know. If it's for that purpose, then all of these are hating my neighbor.
That's a really good point, because I think when we think about money, right, what is it, right? It's basically goods and services. So really, if you want to create money, right, you should be providing a good or a service. And so that's one of the key things when you say, like, it's not God's will that it be gained hastily, in a sense that you don't want to separate money from a provision of goods and services. And so in all these situations, you're seeking to gain value without ever actually giving any goods or services out of her providing. Whereas you can make a lot of money if you can provide very valuable goods or very valuable services. You gonna add something, Judy?
I would say that people that run the get rich schemes do not know God. So therefore they do not realize that in the long run there is a price that is going to be paid by them for
very much.
The easy one, the life insurance.
Oh, yeah.
You see time and time. And I'm not depressed, so
But, like, yeah, that's a way out to provide.
It's just time and time again that these people kill people for the life insurance.
Yeah. So that would probably be in the sinful area. That one's probably clear cut. Right? Okay. All right. Good, good, good. So that kind of leads us to, right, so we have the principle that we don't want to seek to be too rich, too poor, and we don't want to try and gain wealth quickly and hastily. And then the third thing we could look at is that working hard. So let's have some readers for Proverbs. So who's got the first one? Tanner will get Proverbs 6 and then Proverbs 13. Yes, thank you. And then Proverbs 12. Jesse. Okay, go ahead, Tanner.
Go to the anthill slipper, consider her ways and be wise. Without having any chief officer or ruler, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest.
Okay.
Proverbs 13:4. The soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, while the soul of the diligent is richly supplied.
Excellent. And then Jesse?
Proverbs 12:24. The hand of the diligent will rule, while the slothful will be put to forced labor.
Okay. So you can look at the verses or you can add in your own character traits, right? What accompanies the ability to be working hard? What do you see?
Diligence.
Mm-hmm. There's preparation.
Where do you see that one?
She prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest.
So there's kind of thoughtfulness towards prolonged, towards the future. Mm-hmm. What else do we see?
See wisdom in Proverbs 6:6. To be wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, consider her ways and be wise.
I also say in verse 7 of Proverbs 6, she's not waiting for someone to tell her what she should do.
Oh, man, that's a big one. Without having a chief officer or ruler, right? So they're kind of internally or self-motivated. So when you think about like those who are fitting this description, their desire, their internal drive, their tendency, their natural state is to be a hard worker. Not, I think you mentioned, right? Not like I please, not as an I pleaser.
Yes.
Right? Working heartily as for the Lord. Not just to please your boss when they come in. What else?
Self-control or delayed gratification.
Oh, man. That's a big one. That is a big one. And do you see that in which one? The first or second?
Proverbs 13:4, kind of the inverse of this. The soul of the sluggard craves.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing. Soul of the diligence or just supply.
Yeah.
Kind of implying like the opposite of seeking after your craving.
Also kind of in Proverbs 6:6-8 where it's saying she's got her prepares her bread in the summer so that way she can gather food in the harvest, which typically in the fall, so she's got to wait.
Yeah, and just to kind of relate to that, to the agricultural world, why is it significant that she's gathering and preparing it in the summer and in the harvest time versus the winter or the spring or the fall? Like, why is that significant? Anybody know?
That's when the crops are ripe.
Yeah, and so there's a sense in which there's an time of opportunity that if wasted, she won't be able to go and do that in the winter.
Yep.
Right? She sees that this is my window of opportunity to work. I think there's also a sense in which the summer would tend to probably be one of the easiest times to live. So the sluggard might be tempted to just take it easy in the summer, right? When things are easy, food's more readily accessible. Instead of storing and preparing and gathering foresight for the future. So when you think about your marriage, there may be times where you're both working, there's no kids, and it's summertime, right? It's harvest time. Or there may be times in which you're at your highest earnings in your lifetime and everything's paid for, right? So when you think about this working hard wisdom, sometimes you're not just working hard for right now, right? You're working hard for the winter. Or when things are going to be rough, or when you get laid off, or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been thinking about back in that day. I mean, I'm not sure what they did for food preservation, but you know, why are we making pickles right now when we can just eat cucumbers?
Exactly.
And so there's just a wisdom of knowing that there's going to be a time when the food's not readily available. I think even Joseph in Egypt.
That's right. Yeah, you got the seven fat cows, right? And it's like, don't eat all the grain from those 7 years.
Yeah.
And if they hadn't done that, you know, Joseph says, you know, you did this for evil, but God brought used it for good, that he brought about this saving of all this people in Egypt, and Joseph coming to preserve the grain. And
also, pickles are just way better than cucumbers.
It's a good especially debate. It's a good
yeah.
debate. Yeah, they're both quality. We've got cucumbers. That's the one thing that grows in our garden, so we're very happy. We got lots of cucumbers. And how does it help when you think about how to manage your money? Why is just being a hard worker, why is that so helpful overall? How would being a, say you take two families where one family is just really hard workers, why would managing their money be easier than a couple where they're not really hard workers?
You're not a hard worker, you typically have more time.
Okay.
To do things that cost money.
If you're not making money, you're spending money.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think when you're a hard worker, like when you have a little kid, if they work for something like you did with the leaves and get paid for it, you appreciate what you've made more so
mm-hmm.
when you've had to struggle to get it and to do
yeah.
more.
So you know the value of what you took to earn it, which makes you more careful in
how
you spend it.
And in a sense, that preparation, that diligence that goes into your work, in a sense, kind of carries over into the money that you manage as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you're managing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of also working at that as well. So if you already have that habit of you're diligent and you plan ahead and you're wise in what you do in your work, it kind of transfers over to how you manage your money.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say, even apart from this question, what you say is, it really makes a lot of sense in that if you're a hard worker in earning money, there's lots of areas in your life that it's going to require hard work to be a good parent, to be a good spouse, to do a lot of these things. And if you're just used to that attitude of what it takes to work, it's going to make things a lot easier in that sense. Karen?
Yeah, when you get paid to work, you're involved in a transaction where you're offering your goods or services, right? You're offering your time, work, and whatnot, and then receiving money in return. And so when in our opening illustration, like if the guy were to think how many work hours would be involved
uh-huh.
in paying for a $3,000 TV,
yeah,
it might help him think a little bit differently. Like I'm gonna
yeah.
have to work a whole
that's right.
month or whatever just to pay this off.
Yeah.
Earn enough money. So when you put it in that perspective, I guess it helps put things into perspective.
Mm-hmm. Viewing things in terms of that, what do you have to exchange?
Yeah.
The money is more than just paper. It's your time. It's your life. It's your goods and services that you're providing. It's really good.
When you work hard, it's a way to glorify God in everything you do. So that, like practicing it, glorifying God in your work, then transferring, like stewarding your money
mm-hmm.
in all other areas.
You've been well taught on work, the value of work, and we should be happy to. That's good. Yeah, so God created us to work, right? And so it does glorify him for hard workers. I'd also say, too, just in one sense, that people who are working hard continually, they're constantly, like it makes everything easier if you're constantly earning income. And so whether that's a large amount or a small amount, if you're constantly committed to giving your time to serve people and provide goods and bringing that income in, a constant flow of income makes managing your money a lot easier than waiting for huge opportunities. And refrain from that. Okay, this will be a good place to stop. We will come in on case study number one next time. Let me pray for us and we'll be dismissed. Father, it's a joy to just come before you this morning and pray that you'd help us to know not only how to obey you and to follow your commands, but also to choose between many, many options which are possible and to do what is not only right, but is what is wise. And I pray that you'd help us to do that individually as single people, and especially so in our marriage where we exalt and put you first and your desires first. And help us to remember that not only with our money, but with our bodies, with our time, with our life, we are stewards of what's been given to us. I pray that it be used to glorify you. In Jesus' name, amen.